Hello and welcome. My name is Hillary Dewhurst and I'm the head of third-party risk education and advocacy here at Benminder. Like most third-party risk management professionals, I fully recognize the complexities of keeping up with changing laws and regulations, especially regarding privacy laws. In the United States, the lack of federal privacy regulations has led to numerous states implementing their own privacy laws, and there are many more on the way. And if that isn't all, if you're doing business internationally, there are many more privacy laws to consider, and they all vary by jurisdiction. So with such an abundance of new and pending domestic and international privacy laws, third-party risk management programs may need a little bit of help to ensure that their vendors are compliant, especially when teams are small and resources are limited. If you face these challenges, you've come to the right place. Today, we'll be covering the topic of vendor privacy scores and how to implement them into your third-party risk management practices. For our discussion today, I'd like to welcome Rachel Ormiston, the head of privacy at Osano. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Hillary. Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So, Rachel, before we jump into our discussion, can you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your role, and your organization, Osano?
Absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, I'm the head of privacy at Osano, and before that, I served in a number of privacy and cybersecurity executive roles, including as a chief privacy and cyber compliance officer. So I've had to wear many hats, and one of which has been working on vendor risk management for privacy and cyber programs. So I've been in the same place as many of our customers. That's a little bit about me, and turning now to Osano and what we do. Osano helps privacy pros to simplify privacy compliance with a privacy platform. And that platform supports many capabilities, including helping to manage vendor privacy risk by providing tooling that helps conduct vendor privacy assessments, helps to manage data mapping, as well as tracking vendors' privacy posture with vendor privacy scores.
Well, thank you, Rachel. So I'm really excited about our conversation. So let's just jump in. So to start, many of our listeners have been asking about those vendor privacy scores you just mentioned. So can you tell us what a vendor privacy score is exactly?
Sure. So in most privacy regulations, there are typically some baseline requirements that are really to help companies to make sure that they're exercising due diligence on who they share their personal data with. As a result, companies are increasingly finding that they need to take more proactive steps that help them ensure that the data they have is protected at all times. And that could be to meet your privacy obligations. Companies have to have knowledge of their vendor ecosystem so they can understand that risk and how to manage it. That could be through PIAs or contracts, for example. So Osano's vendor privacy risk tooling allows users to get a holistic view of a vendor's privacy practices and their relative privacy risk. And we do this by looking at how a company says it handles privacy and the information that the vendor has chosen to share regarding their privacy compliance efforts. This appears as an overall privacy score with sectional scores that show a detailed breakdown of the factors that go into that score.
Okay, so I think the concept of a vendor privacy score is pretty straightforward, but can you help us understand how those scores are derived? Like, what are the components of a vendor privacy score? How is that information gathered and analyzed?
Sure. So Osano's privacy score is based on a scoring algorithm that maps closely to ISO and NIST standards. And it pulls information in a number of different areas, such as whether a vendor is sharing how they collect information, are there any audits or certifications that they perform, whether they're advising how privacy rights can be exercised. And these scores are regularly updated, but typically a vendor will only see minor fluctuations in scores unless they've made modifications to their published practices. So the Osano Privacy Risk Score Rating Scale is relative over time, and changes one's vendor's practices can really affect the rating of another vendor. And this can help offer valuable insights if you're looking to understand downstream impacts with any data that you might share with a vendor, and whether a drop in score might prompt an additional review. Osano's algorithm automatically determines whether changes are minor or major based on a number of factors, including how much the document has changed and the types of words itself that have changed. A minor change wouldn't necessarily trigger a re-review of the policy by our attorneys, and these might be a date change, an update in a contact name, or correction of a spelling or grammatical error. A major change would trigger a re-review of the policy by your attorney, and these might be the insertion of a deletion of a large portion of text.
Okay. So let's assume that an organization has gone through the process to collect these vendor privacy scores. So how should they be using them in a third-party risk management context?
Sure. So the intent of the risk scoring is to help companies understand and help their individuals evaluate the kind of information that's provided to them prior to data collection. So the privacy risk scores don't necessarily verify compliance with applicable privacy laws because that is subject to so many variables. But the Asana tooling allows organizations to move more efficiently by being able to quantify those potential risks that helps them make informed decisions or prompt further individual research prior to sharing data or entering into a contractual relationship with that third party. And this is what can really help companies to triage for their reviews, determine the prioritization or focus reviews on key areas that might be more important to them. We often hear that companies find these risk scores particularly useful when they're doing regular cadence reviews, when they're doing the renewals, or just when they're about to procure a new vendor.
That is super helpful. So it seems like vendor privacy scores can help you identify where your vendors might have some deficiencies or gaps. So what are some of the most common privacy issues these scores might reveal?
Sure. So a peer review can identify a number of things. And that's where the breakdown of the lower scores can really help you narrow in on the specific sources of concern. So some examples might be that a company hasn't shared much information on their privacy practices at all, so they haven't met their disclosure requirements. Or it could be that they're failing to provide specific information on how data is collected, who it's shared with, or the mechanisms for international data transfer. A poor score can also be because a company has scattered their information across their website, so it's challenging to navigate, and this can result in confusion or gaps. These are all the things that an organization would want to understand, just so they can manage their privacy-related risks and align that with their risk tolerance strategies.
Mm-hmm. So let's say we're finding various issues across the vendor inventory. What would be your advice for addressing them, and how should we prioritize which issues need to be corrected first?
Sure. So companies will likely want to prioritize any issues that are based on the service that the vendor is providing to them and the data that's being processed. So as an example, if a vendor is handling more sensitive information, or if they're providing services that are more critical for your business where there's a business dependency, those are likely to be the vendors where you want to see those higher scores or where you might want to review the scores in more detail. So if a vendor is handling your payroll and you're subject to a law that protects employee data like the GDPR or the CPRA, then it's likely to be a worry if you see that they've scored low in their privacy and security scores. If, however, it's an organization that's creating branded teddy bear swag for trade conferences, that might be lower on the list since it's less likely that they have sensitive information, as much as we love those teddy bears, of course.
Right. Okay. So I want to explore some of the other benefits of vendor privacy scores. I know that these scores can help you understand your organization's data footprint better. So can you expand on that?
Absolutely. So a recent survey reported that more than 8% of organizations share all their data with cloud vendors. And it's often the case that they aren't exactly sure what they're sharing. And that's the thing. If you don't know what you have, then you probably don't know what you're doing with it. Privacy scores can help companies to understand how data is being shared, both in terms of the vendors they share data with, as well as their vendors' vendors or their subprocessors. And we all hope that we're never the ones having to respond to a data breach or a non-compliant vendor. But if that ever does happen, then knowing the extent of your data footprint can make the difference between a timely and compliant response. The Asana tooling can also highlight publicly available information regarding new or ongoing litigation. And this can really help businesses understand whether they're working with a vendor that presents a greater risk due to their litigation profile. So for example, if there are investigations or other kinds of regulatory violations that turn into lawsuits, that could be an indication that a vendor may be vulnerable when it comes to their data privacy internal processes. Similarly, if they're defending multiple breach of contract lawsuits, that's a good indicator that the reliance on contractual provisions to ensure data privacy compliance might not be sufficient.
Okay, so let's switch tracks a little bit. I want to know, when it comes to vendor privacy scores, how might other stakeholders outside of third-party risk management utilize them?
Yeah, so following on about that digital footprint, organizations that don't understand their data spread might be a compliance risk, but it also means they probably have limited insights on how to optimize that data for business intelligence. privacy might be a carrot for many organizations and compliance is a stick, but leveraging those privacy risk scores by engaging your stakeholders can actually really help you understand your vendors better and where to focus your resources. Sometimes looking at those relative scores of similar vendors, with one showing significant risk and the other showing less risk, it can be a compelling argument for a business team to streamline their processes or to choose one vendor over the other if there's nothing else that separates them apart. And streamlining usually means cost savings, which keeps finance teams happy. And we all know it pays to keep finance happy. But in an era where teams are thinking about more about data, including their own data, having those scores can help empower the business to negotiate more favorable terms and give them the confidence that they're working with a partner that's aligned with their compliance needs. And I think that can be such a turning point in just getting that buy-in from the business.
Okay, I see. That is very great information. So Rachel, in your role as the head of privacy, you obviously need to look at the bigger picture. So what are some of the most pressing concerns that organizations are facing when it comes to vendor privacy risk?
Sure. So privacy pros, they're busy. They're managing vendor privacy risk amid an ever-evolving landscape from new regulations, emerging technologies, and changing customer expectations. In 2023, we saw a large number of vendors adopt AI within their product offerings, as well as continuing that dialogue and the validity of cross-border data transfers for restricted data, particularly in Europe. And so while keeping up with all this, being compliant, managing your internal resources and doing your day job, it can sound exhausting and overwhelming, but it really doesn't need to be. By implementing and operationalizing your privacy program to include vendor privacy risk management and setting your organization up for success by knowing who your vendors are, the risk they present, and managing that accordingly. By using a tool for privacy risk scoring, it can help remove some of that burden by just giving you those insights that help you fast track your reviews and accelerate your vendor review processes. And if you can see at a glance that an organization has a poor score or has multiple violations against them, this might be the thing that helps prompt an internal discussion of whether that's a partner that your business wants to work with.
Right. All right. So let's talk about regulators. How are they looking at vendor requirements for privacy?
So in the EU, we've seen regulators take actions where companies just haven't performed due diligence. So we know that this is definitely a critical element for companies that want to make sure that they're doing what they can to be compliant. And they can do this by embedding those processes that allow them to proactively assess their supply chain prior to sharing data with them.
Okay, so my next question would be is how would you account for regional variation?
Sure. So the privacy scores that Osano has are prepared as a global score and don't have those regional variations. And this has been a very deliberate choice by Osano for the following reasons. One, privacy is a global topic. Many of our customers are hosting data in data centers across the globe or working with multinational teams and partners. And by limiting privacy scores to specific regions, it actually might give a poor representation to a company that requires a global view. GDPR is also often the baseline. And so given the globality of data protection, GDPR has been the baseline for many privacy compliance programs. And even when companies do not need to comply with the GDPR, we often find that privacy-first companies choose to review the requirements to adopt privacy-focused strategies with that GDPR baseline. And I think the other point, and this is probably the most relevant for privacy pros this year as they're catching up to all these new regulations, we're starting to see more and more laws emerge. At the time of recording, we've got 14 US state laws either in effect or coming into effect over the next couple of years. And so with that in mind, the GDPR score is indicative for many companies who are looking to understand those potential third-party risks as they evaluate the impact of these US laws that are catching up and how they're impacting their organization. And even when a company is not subject to the GDPR and isn't looking to address specifically the GDPR and their program, using that as an internal monitor can help them base what they need for their own acceptable scores internally.
Mm-hmm. So now I want to know how companies consider reconciling vendors that have different postures for different domains. So for example, a vendor that has a really strong security posture, but a relatively weak privacy posture.
Yeah, so companies that go through audits for SOC 1, SOC 2, ISO 27001, etc., They're all reviewed to validate against alignment and compliance with those frameworks. And while there's certainly an overlap between security and privacy, particularly in an era of cloud computing and AI and digital resiliency, they are distinct fields. So we sometimes find that security scores and privacy scores can be vastly different. However, just in the same way that a lack of information in a security policy would be a concern for a security professional, gaps in privacy policy can be a red flag for a privacy pro who needs to do some more work and look at that more closely. So if a company has security certifications or reports, but doesn't include them in their privacy policy, this will likely result in a low score because this basic information, how personal data or personal information is kept secure, is going to be a requirement for privacy programs, just that baseline requirement. So the GDPR and the US privacy laws, they all look at those security standards and they expect them to be maintained. So as a result, if a security information isn't easy to locate or navigate to, or is hidden in a website, this would prompt a check for a potential privacy concern that someone would need to look at as they're reviewing their overall scores.
Oh, right. Well, Rachel, this has been so helpful. You've shared such great information with us today. I know I've learned a lot. So before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, thank you so much for having me here today. Myself, along with the team at Asana, we're very passionate about digital privacy and helping organizations to simplify their privacy compliance journey. So I very much enjoyed today's discussion. Thank you again.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I would like to thank our guest, Rachel Ormiston, Head of Privacy for Asana, for joining us and sharing such a wealth of information. Rachel, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's been great. Thanks for having me.
To our listeners, we hope you enjoyed tuning into today's discussion with Rachel Ormiston from Asana. To learn more about Asana, please visit their website at www.asana.com. If you'd like to learn more about vendor privacy risk and many other third-party risk management topics, we have thousands of resources on our site at venminder.com/library or venminder.com/blog. You can also network with other third-party risk management professionals like Rachel when you join Third Party Think Tank, our online community that is dedicated to third-party risk professionals and is free to join. Connect and post questions to your peers at thirdpartythinktank.com.